Good evening.
Guten Morgen.
What?
It's the Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, is it going to make you scream? Or something. Anyway, this is episode 57 of the Big Planet Comics Podcast, you guys.
That's the thing.
Woo, woo. Yeah, so that's it. My name's Kevin.
Goodbye, everybody.
That's it. Goodbye.
We're out.
You guys have been great.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And what are we doing here? What's going on?
Talking about some comics, man.
We're talking some talk.
Do I usually ask you guys what you've been doing first, or do I usually say that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, you can check us out on Facebook, or you can follow us on Twitter at Big Planet Comics?
Usually ask us first.
Yeah, what we're doing.
Oh, wait, what have you guys been up to?
I've been checking us out on Facebook at Big Planet Comics.
Is that what you've been doing?
No.
I do that sometimes.
That's
sad.
What have I been doing? I went to an awesome party my friends threw, which some delicious food was cooked and grilled over the weekend.
Party time.
It was party time.
I did that too.
Excellent.
Oh, and I gave my friend Sarah Axe Cop Munchkin Edition for her birthday. She loved it.
Nice.
That's cool.
That's pretty sweet.
What about you, Nick? What have you been up to?
Same thing as Jared.
Yep.
You gave your friend Sarah Axe Cop Munchkin Edition, but yeah. She hated it.
She hated it.
I told you she'd get her something different.
Is that really what you've been doing?
Yeah.
I've been just getting ready for SPX. I know I've said that the last few weeks, but it's been true every time.
What all you listeners out there don't realize is that the two of us have been slowly watching Kevin's mental decline over the last 2 weeks, building towards a crescendo roughly September 14th.
I'm hoping I'll have like a mental breakdown that's equivalent to Christian Bale's in The Machinist, so I'll lose like 70 pounds or whatever. That's my goal.
I didn't notice a difference.
It's true.
Oh, actually, I have been playing a lot of pinball arcade, which has been an addiction of late.
That's true.
It's all like classic pinball games.
We were playing some Monster Bash last night.
Nice.
Check it out. Available now for Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and iOS devices.
And so on.
And so on and so forth. No, it's pretty awesome, though.
And maybe we'll get some free pinball machines.
That would be great.
is that what's going to happen? Yeah. I don't need any more pinball machines. I have 3 pinball machines.
Yeah.
And only one more. 1.5.
That doesn't count.
Cool. So, I guess that's it. Should I talk about some upcoming signings and events that we have going on around here?
Whatever.
Yes.
We got September 8th and 9th, Baltimore Comic Con, a signing and or event. I think the second one. September 15th and 16th is SPX, which we've talked about before.
Definitely an event of the season.
Small Press Expo. Check it out. SPXPO.com.
Spectacular.
.com. And then September 22nd, an actual signing.
Woo.
Raina Telgemeier is going to be signing her new book, Drama, at our Vienna and College Park locations.
Yeah.
And September 29th, Gordon Harris, writer of Pedestrian, which is a new post-apocalyptic sci-fi comic.
Yep, another local creator.
Local creator. And he's going to be at our Vienna location from 3 to 5 on September 29th. And then November 3rd, Ben Hackey, writer of Legends of Zeta the Space Girl.
Maker of Big ZD.
He's also going to be he does that. Well, I don't know. We'll have to ask him when he gets here.
We will.
Do you like Big ZD? And yeah. He'll be like, yeah, I don't want to do this signing anymore. And
out.
He'll be at our Vienna and College Park stores as well on November 3rd. That's a long way away, November 3rd.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
well, his book hasn't come out yet. So
get ready.
It's the sequel.
It is the future. All right. Speaking of the future, well, not even really. Let's do some news. Here's Nick with the news.
All right. So DC announced that they're going to be releasing another Justice League book. Woo-hoo. This one titled Justice League of America, which is kind of weird because I kind of thought the other book was Justice League of America, but I guess they're the international, but they're not Justice League International.
I'm confused. Justice League of America?
I was just gonna keep playing it. Kevin loves that song.
I do. It's got a chicken in it.
So I guess the other one's
a rooster, technically.
I don't understand. Because Justice League of America have always been.
Well, Justice League is Justice League. They're Justice League International. Now the Justice League International are gone, I guess.
Yeah.
But it is just called Justice League.
But they're the America Justice League.
They
work for like the government, yeah.
Oh.
And
I read that comic.
Here's the it's gonna be written by Geoff Johns again.
Good for him.
And, spread him a little bit thin.
Yeah. And drawn by David Finch.
Who's
favorite.
Sometimes all right.
Pretty good.
favorite's a nice way of saying that he's all right.
The team makeup's pretty interesting. It's kind of like the street level.
Oh, are they wearing like Kiss makeup or something?
Yeah. It's like Luke Cage.
Yeah.
No,
what? I would read that in a second.
Martian Manhunter, which is explains his departure from Stormwatch.
Need to go save another comic.
Did you just say the team's interesting is like more like street level characters, and then you're like Martian Manhunter?
Well, Martian Manhunter, like the like, government goon Martian Manhunter.
Wears like a trench coat, investigates crime. That's pretty street.
I feel like there should be a comic where Martian Manhunter and Firestorm team up together, and it would be just like The Odd Couple, but but Martian Manhunter would die.
That would be hilarious.
Then we got Green Arrow. Which, you know, whatever.
Oh, star of the CW show Arrow.
Yeah, coming soon.
No. Coming soon on CW. I saw it. I downloaded the CW Fall First Look, and there was a preview of Arrow on it. Looks like Smallville.
Does it?
Oh, God. We got Katana.
Oh, from The Outsiders?
From The Outsiders.
Oh, wow. Yeah, good call.
Great movie.
The new Green Lantern.
Yeah, what does that mean? I saw that.
He's like the Arab
ethnic.
Green Lantern.
Oh, he is
taking
be
over
ethnic.
For Hal Jordan.
Oh, the racist Green Lantern.
He's weird because he uses guns.
Yeah,
I don't understand.
Really? Are they constructs?
I don't think so. I think they're just guns.
So he's the most ill-prepared, uncreative Green Lantern ever.
Maybe his bullets are constructs. Huh? I don't know. Whatever.
Oh, man.
Anyway, he's edgier.
he sounds edgy.
Then we got Stargirl. Which is cool.
Which Stargirl?
From JSA, like the teen one.
The Star-Spangled Kid Stargirl?
Yeah. Which is cool. I think she's a little more edgy in this again.
Oh, boy.
Which, whatever.
Oh, boy.
You got Hawkman.
Hawkman? Yeah.
He seems to be back in his old costume, though, not in that armor costume that he's had in his book. This is the less savage Hawkman.
This is the friendly Hawkman.
And we got Catwoman, which is cool.
That's
and then
weird.
Best member of all, we got the return of fan favorite JLA character, Vibe.
Vibe's back, you guys.
If you guys don't remember who Vibe is, he was...
Nope.
The first panel he was introduced was him breakdancing.
Isn't he from Justice League Detroit?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was from
Justice League Detroit. And he's like vaguely racist because when he's in front of people that aren't white, he uses like a Latino accent.
What?
Yeah. He has all sorts of
I think they'll probably drop that. Are they just, they're probably just going to make him Latino.
Edgy. Oh, man. I don't like this retconning of Vibe's true identity.
Did they show what Vibe looks like? I didn't actually see a picture
of
this.
Yeah, he's white.
He's on that image. He's like creeping in the background.
Really?
Wow. He kind of looks like Wonder Man used to look, right? He wears like sunglasses and
that's what he used to look like. But it looks like now he's got more pouches.
Oh boy!
DC Comics crawling into the 90s.
That's just indicative of DC Comics' great relationship with Rob Liefeld at the moment.
Speaking of Rob Liefeld,
yep.
This last piece of news has got like. I got like four pages.
That is pieces of news. Yeah. Nick has many
highlights,
pieces of news.
Please.
Yeah. All right. So we talked about Rob Liefeld kind of going after the editors. And
So just to catch people up, Rob Liefeld left DC Comics
in a huff
and said basically that there was too much editorial interference, but he was doing this very publicly out on Twitter.
Oh, yes.
So Scott Snyder, jumped to the defense of one of the editors Nick's got all the tweets.
Yeah,
go for it.
Tell the story.
Apparently there was some, that part isn't in there, but apparently like Scott Snyder said something like, oh, you know, this editor's a nice guy, blah, blah, blah. And then a few days later, Rob Liefeld tweeted, "It's not you. It never has been. It's Batman." And then Scott Snyder is like,
basically saying to Scott Snyder, like,
yeah,
like you think you're a good writer, but you're popular because you're writing Batman.
Yeah. And so,
isn't Scott Snyder writing Aquaman?
Yeah.
Rebuttal?
No, he's not.
No.
He's writing Swamp Thing.
Jeff Johns, I can't remember.
But then he's like, Scott Snyder tweets, "I can assure you, Batman doesn't sell the way it does because it's Batman. It sells that way because of me and Greg." And then. Liefeld says, "Get over yourself, you pretentious prick." And then it starts getting worse. Well, not worse, but it says, Rob Liefeld tweets again, "Been berated in DMs by Scott Snyder this morning."
That means direct messages.
Yeah.
For people
"Excuse me if I don't marvel at your amazing abilities to write Batman. Piss off."
No.
But there's also a picture of what they were talking about between these two tweets.
Yeah, because Rob Liefeld, in a quite dicky move, took a screenshot of all these personal messages that they were sending back and forth and then made those public, even though they were never intended to be.
Yeah, and Scott Snyder's like, "Dude, why are you mad at me?" I was like, "I'm genuinely confused. He's like, "It's not specific to me, but I'm not sure why you're so angry at me. Like I said, I've always been in your corner at DC. And then he says, we aren't going to do this in private anymore.
That's what Rob Liefeld says?
Scott Snyder said that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then he says, "You are bleeping crazy." Scott Snyder again. And See, it's Rob Liefeld just posted the messages from Scott Snyder. He didn't post what he said.
Oh.
And so it's like Scott Snyder being like, what are you talking about? Well, and then like him like saying bad things about him. But anyway, then it goes back to the tweets again, which get pretty crazy because he's like, Scott Snyder's like, nice, your Twitter feed's the best thing you've written all year.
Oh, wow.
Zing. And then Rob Liefeld says, of course, because it's not edited. And then Scott Snyder says, oh, I'll give you credit, Rob. Batman might sell in spite of me and Greg Capullo, as you say, but Deathstroke and Hawkman failed because of you.
Wow.
And then he says, credit where it's due, brother. That's all I'll say on that. Comics. And then Rob says, my sales went up on those books, Scott Snyder. Sorry, bud. Scott says, LOL, and you can put that in your pouch and keep it for later. And then Rob says, one word, haunt, two words, Swamp Thing, not all creations equal. I guess he's trying to say that Haunt was really like good and Swamp Thing is not or something.
Whatever.
And he says, Batman is the number one selling character in the history of the biz, period, end of story. It will endure beyond creators' careers. And then there's more.
Oh, geez.
Then Scott says, LOL, my good buddy Rob posted our conversation. And he's talking about the actual pictures that actually went up there. And he says, I think it says all there is to say about the matter, no? And, yeah, it's pretty crazy. Oh, well, here we go. This is Scott Snyder's final word on it. He says, I'm back to our regularly scheduled programming. I'll echo what my brother Greg Capullo said before. All of us on Team Batman are extremely proud of the success, and the success is due to your support. But as a team on the book, if we didn't believe that our incredible and humbling support was due at least a little to us being doing a somewhat decent job, if we sat back and said Batman sells, what sort of book would what would that engender? Then it's pretty long. He goes on and on, and he says like
that sounds like more than 140 characters.
Yeah.
He said, I will not fight or post another negative tweet about Rob or anyone, and I want to say sorry to you all and no one else, to you, the fans, to comic, not just me or Rob, for bothering with this. It's a waste, and we should be pushing the good, not attacking each other. And I'm guilty of that, too. So I'm sorry to you for going negative. Thanks to those who reminded me of that.
That sounds like a big old crazy thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's kind of all self-explanatory. There's not really that much to say about it. Initially, I was kind of in Rob Liefeld's corner a little bit. I understand his complaints about too much editorial interference. I'm not a fan of his work really, but
he's such an egotist.
Seems like his ego is huge. And even Scott Snyder, he doesn't paint himself in the greatest light in that situation, but you know, it seems that in the end he kind of handled it pretty well.
Wow.
You know, Batman is good because he writes it and it's good. And you know, other Batman books like Dark Knight suck because they have bad writers on them.
But he did have a point that Batman's a great character. And you know, to come onto a book with really not good characters, it's harder.
But that doesn't mean, I mean, like other people have written books with nobody care. Runaways or something. You know, those are like nobody knows those characters.
Those are new characters. I mean, like coming out with a terrible character and trying to make it good. Like,
but Batman sells a lot more than like Batman Dark Knight.
That's true.
Or Batman and Robin. Any of the other Batman series.
Yeah.
But anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
I
can see what Rob Liefeld was saying, but I think saying he has a good point is a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah. He had a point.
Yeah, he did have a point. All right, so that's it for news, right?
That's a lot of news.
All right, let's do some viewer mail. You guys ready?
Ready.
All right, first up, we've got a question from Taron Hill. He seems really worried.
Oh, God, what happened?
He says, is Marvel planning on killing off major superheroes and starting over? I've noticed books starting off as issue one again, like Thor, the Fantastic Four, Avengers, and the Hulk. I see new titles like Astonishing Avengers, Uncanny Avengers, I think it means, Indestructible Hulk. Will the Red Hulk be killed? Because I see the book title changed to Red She-Hulk.
It is. Yeah.
The Fantastic Four will have a new lineup with Medusa, She-Thing, Ant-Man, and She-Hulk. Where's the original Fantastic Four? Is this Phoenix Avengers X-Men story conclusion going to wipe out the entire Marvel universe? So I think probably some other people are a little concerned about this
that's
too.
That's a good point.
Like Jared is saying it's a good point, but I think that he also doesn't know what's going on
The thing that Marvel has reiterated like over and over again, like online, is they're like trying to like put the word out there. It's like not a reboot.
No, but that's the thing. Like so many people think it is. That's what I think it's a good point. Is like, especially doing it after DC did such a marketed reboot of their entire universe. well, that but people are nervous.
So to address some specific questions in here, where are the original Fantastic Four? They're still going to have their own series called Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a separate book called FF.
Yeah, like so, there is now.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Except FF is going to be a separate team.
Like the Fantastic Four are out in like space on some adventure, and there's a Fantastic Four team kind of replacing them all.
So they are going to be in the FF book.
Yes.
So basically it's swapping characters to a different book, and then the Fantastic Four is going to be Earth's character.
Kind of, because FF right now isn't even really a Fantastic Four book anyway.
That's what I mean. So the team Fantastic Four is going to be in FF now.
No, team Fantastic Four is going to be in Fantastic Four.
Oh, okay.
No. FF is the Medusa.
That makes more sense.
The wacky team.
So it's like the supplemental Fantastic Four family book.
Yeah. Red Hulk is being replaced with Red She-Hulk, but I believe Red Hulk is also in one of the Avengers titles, so he's not going to be dead.
I haven't seen him in any of the Avengers titles, but I just read the last issue of Hulk, which came out today. It was the last one with Red Hulk in it, and he says in the back, like, Hulk will be in something else that's coming out soon that I have something to do with. And I'm pretty sure that's, like Dark Avengers is kind of having a new lineup, a new story.
And Jeff Parker writes that as well.
And I think Red Hulk is going to, because it makes sense, because he's kind of like a villain turned hero, and he can kind of be the leader of the Dark Avengers.
Yeah, so the Avengers will still be around. Hulk will still be around. Yeah. FF will still be around. Fantastic Four. And the end of the... I think something crazy is going to happen at the end of this Avengers versus X-Men storyline that will cause some of these things to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't think... It's not really going to wipe out the universe. I mean, a lot of books aren't even going to change numbering. They're just going to keep going.
Right, so, that's true.
Yeah.
And also, like you mentioned, some of the others have been restarting recently. I mean, Daredevil and, like, you know, Uncanny X-Force and Wolverine. There's been, like, a lot of turnover in Marvel recently of just, like, restarting and retitling books.
So that's always...
No, that's what I'm saying. So this is just, like, they're doing it with a lot all at once, but it's not, like, a new thing.
Yeah, they did a similar thing at the beginning of the Heroic Age, where they launched Avengers and started renumbering new Avengers and a couple other things, and brought back Journey into Mystery and some other stuff.
Yeah, so. And a lot of these things are kind of coincidences, because Bendis was kind of done with Avengers, so he was ready to move on, and, like...
True.
Fraction is like pretty much wrapping up his big Iron Man story that he's been writing for years.
And Brubaker's done like completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's logical for what the creators are doing that this should be a new title.
So I think the reason why I think a lot of people are confused by this is because the whole reason Marvel's doing this in the first place is to sort of ride that wave, that successful relaunch that DC had.
Yeah, for sure.
So they're kind of giving the impression that it's something similar.
But the thing they're emphasizing in this is like, they're like, it's the same universe, just new starting point.
Yeah.
Like they keep trying to emphasize that because people, they want to differentiate themselves from DC, like saying like, we're not going to get rid of all these stories that have happened and just start over.
But they also, I mean, they do want casual people to think, oh, everything's starting over and this is like what I'm going to,
they're calling it like a season one or like a new season of Marvel.
Yeah.
And Avengers vs. X-Men does seem like the conclusion of kind of all this stuff that's been going on for the last 7 years, basically.
So,
I'll be curious to see. Basically, what it is they're just shifting around writers to different books and moving some characters around.
Yeah.
Hopefully that helps answer some of your stuff. I don't know, Taron, if Vision is still going to be around.
I know that.
But I know that's what you're thinking about. Yeah, Taron's a big Vision.
A real worry there.
All right, we got another question. This is from Aaron M., who asked us a question before.
Aaron the Mysterious.
Yeah, or maybe he was not so mysterious anymore after this. So he says, guys, first off, I love the show.
Woo!
Always a joy to hear every week.
Did we critique him earlier for not complimenting us?
Oh, maybe we did. But I like it. He's a boolean. My question is...
No, repeat the good stuff.
Oh, yeah. He says, guys, first off, I love the show.
Yes,
always
yes.
a joy to hear every week.
Oh.
I don't have a joy to the world sound effect on my board. So he says, my question is, now that we are in the thick of the political season here in the U.S., has a creator's politics, religious, or social views ever turned you off to their work? Were you able to look past it eventually? Thanks. Aaron M., the M. is for awesome, it says.
Aaron, awesome.
I should have sent you guys this question before.
I feel like we always go with Dave Sim.
That's a pretty good choice for
this.
Yeah, I feel like we have had a similar question to this, sort of about creators' lives outside of comics and how they've affected our enjoyment of those comics. And Dave Sim is very political, sort of anti-woman stance.
Yeah.
But it was at least entertainingly crazy.
Usually it doesn't affect me. I mean, as long as it doesn't isn't overtly political messages in like the comics.
Oh, that is a turn.
Yeah, if it creeps into the work. But then again, like Steve Ditko, he's like an objectivist. He's like sort of follows
Ayn Rand
yes. and believes in, you know, like all like personal fiscal responsibility to an extreme level right. and stuff. And that stuff definitely starts to creep into his work with his Mr. A stuff, yeah, and even his later
insane.
Question. But yeah. I actually really like it.
Oh, you do? Okay.
but almost because it betrays yeah. that sensibility about him, yeah. and I find it really interesting because it's kind of a door into his mind, which maybe to me seems like crazy, but I also don't feel like his views really hurt anybody. I feel like if I thought like a creator was like racist or something like that, that would probably
That's
bother
true.
Me.
Yeah.
Oh, there is one whose stuff I've never read since. Oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to remember his name. Come back to me.
There's a creator I'm thinking of who I heard was like very homophobic, and it bothered me about him. Oh, but right. I'm not going to say his name because yeah, yeah. I don't know enough about it to really say yeah. that it's true. You know what yeah. I mean? I'm not going to call somebody out.
And, yeah.
But I'm trying to. Yeah, usually I think most writers have the sense to like keep that stuff to themselves.
Wait, I got it. Who wrote Blackheart Billy with Rick Remender?
Wrote it with Rick Remender?
Well, didn't someone else work on that with him?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, well, whoever it was, he just. Oh, and I'm thinking of someone else, but Mark Miller, when he did the Unfunnies, it was so offensively bad. And like, I think it's often when they kind of go into the like humorous realm, especially as like a foreigner commenting on American society, he was like offensively racist and something. It's just like really badly done. That kind of put me off him for a bit.
I
really like his other stuff.
I will say Frank Miller's sort of post 9/11 Holy Terror, where his political views very much.
Yeah,
don't just creep in around the edges. They like creep in out towards the edges from the middle.
It's like Batman killing terrorists.
Yeah. So that put me off Frank Miller a little bit.
Yep.
Besides the fact that Frank Miller's art is not and writing isn't quite to the level it used to be. But yeah. So
I mean, I think just one final point is like most of the people who are in the creative media of, you know, film or books or like maybe less books, but are like tend to slide towards the liberal side of things. And especially in comics, you just don't get a lot of politics. It's kind of strange.
It just reminded me of something funny and stupid that's happening.
I wonder if some people are turned off by Marvel's very lefty, like other politics in their comics are like super liberal.
Yeah.
Like the Civil War weirdness.
Yeah. Civil War is very like, was very much, I mean, very thinly veiled sort of attack on the Patriot Act and the government's politics during, post 9/11 and kind of. You know, how much of your freedom are you willing to give up for a sense of security and stuff like that, which I think is like, you know, I think like it's practically like Rachel Maddow is like one of their editors over there, which that stuff doesn't bother me because I tend towards that direction anyway.
That's my point,
but I'm sure there are some people that do not like that at all.
Yeah.
No, because thinking
about
it.
Did anybody root for Iron Man in Civil War? Somebody must have.
I'm sure people did.
He's a patriot. No, like the sort of stuff like they're doing like with Astonishing X-Men with like having gay marriage and stuff in it, like that puts some people off.
That's true, I think that's great. So
I know that's again my thing.
Me.
It's like it's a very liberal take on stuff, but I know that some people didn't like it. So.
No.
Anyway, hopefully that answers your question, or at least we tried to explore
discuss
it.
Our mind.
I was going to say on a side note that reminded me of something really stupid. That there's an issue of Spawn coming out in November that has two different editions: one if Romney wins, and one if Obama wins.
Oh boy!
I was like,
that turns me off of Todd McFarlane's Spawn.
Yeah. Well.
That's the only thing that makes me not want to read Spawn.
You were getting every issue up till then. Are you going to quit?
Indeed. It's true.
Broken.
All right. So that's it for the questions this week. If you guys have questions, you can always send them to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com or leave a message on the podcast hotline at 1-703-539-CAST. That number again, the one I just said.
Yeah.
Also, you know, Twitter, Facebook, just send us questions wherever.
Hit us up.
Yeah. Message in a bottle.
Stop us on the street.
Good song message.
I thought I was just going to sing it to us.
I was going to sing it, but I'm not going to. All right, so now it is time. We're going to do another 52 pickup. We did Stormwatch a few weeks ago, and now we're going to talk a little bit about All-Star Western. So I don't know. We Jared's gonna keep it going, Jared.
Yeah,
keep it going.
Pick it up.
So we've had a lot of people coming in saying that All-Star Western is like one of the best New 52 comics. And I think for all of us, it's one
you've been schooling us
that we kind of liked at the beginning and then just kind of lost track of.
Yeah.
So we decided to play a little 52 pickup and catch up on it.
I've been referring to this comic as Jonah Hex all day.
You have. I'm like, yeah, I was like, Nick, should I read this new Gabriel Bell graphic novel or should I read this Western thing? And you're like, you should read Jonah Hex.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's called All-Star Western, and it does have like backups with other Western characters.
But it's Jonah Hex.
It's a Jonah Hex comic, yeah.
Nope. I'm going to do a rebuttal to your point.
Why? Because there's a backup story?
Yes.
Yeah, but those are backup stories.
No, but that's important.
It's a Jonah Hex comic with backup stories.
Right, yeah. But it's every backup story is cycling through their huge catalog of Western characters that they hardly ever knew. Like, the first few issues, it was like a 3 or 4 of the first issues was a single storyline of a backup character. But after that, they did one-shots, they did over 2 issues and other short stories. They had a lot of characters I'd never heard of. I mean, some like Batlash that I knew and stuff.
Yeah, but it's not like they do like 5 issues of Jonah Hex and then they switch to like 5 issues of Batlash.
No, I agree.
You know what? It seems like one of those comics that should say like at the top, All-Star Western, like really
starring
small,
Jonah
starring in Jonah Hex,
that,
really big.
I think it would be a better.
Like, kind of like
accurate.
How it used to be Adventure Comics with Plastic Man and Aquaman.
Or Action Comics starring Superman and it would actually have backup characters. But yeah, I still think that is awesome.
Regardless of that, the series is awesome.
It's actually pretty good, yeah. It's Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti who wrote Jonah Hex for a long time, and that was probably the best comic they wrote. I mean, they've written some really terrible stuff too, like Battle for Bloodhaven.
Yeah.
Is this their only relaunch title?
I think so.
I think so,
it is. Yeah. But so they've been a little spotty over time, but I feel like the core story in this, which is kind of about Jonah Hex and the early days of Gotham City, like the building of Arkham Asylum and some other interesting things.
And Dr. Arkham, Amadeus Arkham, is his like sidekick in
this. Yeah. It's almost like a weird like Sherlock Holmes and Watson type
That's
relationship. But it incorporates some of the newer elements from Batman, like the Court of the Owls, and then like some things like the Crime Bible, which was something from the old 52.
Yep.
Is that now being referred to as the old 52?
Well, I think there were like 60 something comics coming out when it ended.
the old 63.
Yeah.
But, and I think it's kind of interesting. I think it's kind of a cool book.
Yeah. There's a lot of cool other Western characters pop up like in the actual story, like his friends,
Cinnamon
and what's his face? Nighthawk,
Flamebird, something.
Oh, Flamebird's the anyway. But.
And then his girlfriend, like Tallulah or whatever her name is.
Oh, she's awesome.
She's the greatest. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I still have some of the same complaints I did when we reviewed the first issue of this. Like Moratat is an awesome artist, but he's coming from like the European style where you have a lot of time to really build up your art. So a lot of this seems a little rushed.
Yeah.
But like when he gets into like either a page he really liked or just an awesome scene and stuff, it's amazing. And he's so good at drawing women. Like his action scenes are okay, but not great.
I think the action is kind of his weakest.
Right. Like he's really good at like drawing Hex doing, you know, like lighting a cigarette or like posing with his guns. And it looks amazing. The action's a little rough. But then he'll draw a woman and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So I think the problem was I think I read the first few issues when it was coming out. The second issue, spoiler, the whore he is talking to in the first episode gets murdered, or maybe that's the end of the first issue, as like a plot point of like, you know, people are on your trail. And then
woman of the night, please.
The soiled dove he's speaking to is unfortunately murdered, and so there's no female characters in that second issue. And I was kind of like, it's kind of a waste of Moritat's talents. But as time goes on, there's like a supporting cast of villains, and half of them are women. Like it's a lot of other, like he gets, like Nick said, this cool sidekick ex flame that starts teaming up with them, and just a really good mix of characters.
And they have a lot of sex in front of Dr. Arkham.
Yes.
It's hilarious.
But yeah, I think it's one of the better like build up of Jonah Hex's character to have this crazy old ex girlfriend.
Well, and I think Moritat's really good as well, like with lighting, which is great in this, because there's a lot of stuff that takes place in like the sewers and and you know, and it's just old Gotham City is very similar to like Victorian London. I feel like in style, and it's got a cool like creepy element.
Yeah, and there's a lot of like kind of ancestors of modern characters, like,
which is a little cheesy.
No, I think it's great,
but it builds on like the kind of the building of Gotham.
Yep.
Like it starts with like Mayor Cobblepot is building bridges into Gotham.
It just makes me think of like Shanghai Knights when they're like, oh, what's your name, little kid? And he's like, I'm Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah,
but it is cool because of course Gotham. like these like powerful families remain powerful families. Yep. So it makes sense that these people in these positions of
power.
And
there's always been
people.
References to their like history and like the
sure and Arkham, you know, is like a
yeah, and like in the last issue, like issue 12, he talks to like Mayor Cobblepot, and he's like, I've been thinking of expanding the mental institution, like yep. blah blah blah, and like, and there's stuff like that. Like there's Wayne is in it. Like I forget which Wayne.
I would be curious to see a little more of like from the Waynes in it. I think
that's pretty cool. That's
building
in this
it up
a lot
later
yeah.
on. Well, he's definitely like more of a supporting character.
He's like a casino owner, and that's kind of where they're getting their fortune. But like,
which is interesting because that's what they did in Flashpoint.
Yeah, but he's using he's using the fortune from the casino to like build the city and like. He's competing with like the owls and the crime Bible stuff.
It's and at the same time, they're like simultaneously building Blackgate Prison and Arkham Asylum. Yeah, it's actually pretty interesting. I think by virtue of being set, you know, almost what 150 years ago or something like that. When does this take place? Like the 1880s,
1890s.
So like 130 years ago. Yeah, I think it has a little room to breathe where some other books maybe don't.
Yeah, they could do whatever they want. Although there is something really crazy in this, which I was like, there's an issue where they go underneath Wayne Manor to like the caves where the Batcave is.
Yep.
And there's like a lost tribe of Native Americans and giant bats. Creatures, like prehistoric bat
like
creatures.
Seven I was like, foot tall bats.
I was like, is that still there? Yeah. Like, is that still like deep under like the Batcave?
Yeah, and they tell the Waynes like, that's quite peculiar. I had no idea. Yeah, it's awesome.
That's just weird.
Like the building up of kind of the mythology of the DC universe. I think this is one of the most interesting books for that.
Yeah, but, and the backups guys, are mostly all right.
The real star, Gotham City.
No,
it's true.
It is true, actually.
Yeah,
yeah. My favorite of the backups, I think, was what was her name again?
Barnaby Ghost, Bartleby Ghost.
No,
Barbary Ghost.
Barbary Ghost. Oh. Yeah,
nice.
And that one's who's the artist on that? Is it Jordi Brunet?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's great.
Well,
and
maybe.
Yeah. It's interesting because a lot of the backup artists are like sort of these more classic Western
style.
Yeah. Like Phil Winslade and Jordi Brunet.
Phil Winslade, I think, does the.
Yeah. So the backups are, to me, less interesting than
the main story. It's an interesting thing. Like, I like the Batlash one a lot. It's just a single issue one, but it's just like Batlash telling a story about it. It's like, you know, charming jerk who gets away with everything, but it actually told the story at the same time. I thought that one was really good. So, yeah.
But overall, I mean, a cool book, I think, worth checking out.
Definitely check out Jonah Hex. It's a great series.
a much better read than Stormwatch, which we did a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
much more even.
But it's also the same creator the whole time.
It's been the same writer and artist the whole time, which is cool. I think
really
maybe
impressive.
There was one issue that Mortat didn't draw, but overall, it's like been the same two people, which is great, you know? Keeps a consistent tone and everything.
Yeah,
definitely. Cool. Well, that is the 52 pickup for All-Star Western. I keep saying 52 pickup like it's so cool. Like it's the best thing I ever came up with.
Pretty clever.
Yeah, that's it. So let's talk about some new books. So you guys want to do some reviews?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it.
We love comics. They're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
All right. So first up this week. Oh, we got a good one. This is Cat's Cradle, number one, The Golden Twine. This is by Joe Rue? Rio?
Where's her name? Where's her name?
Joe Rue.
Joe Rue.
No, it's Rue.
Ryu?
Yeah, from Ryu from Street Fighter. this is a new book from Kids Can Press, who've put out a couple things that I think we've talked about recently. But I thought this was cool. It's like a kind of, what would you even call this? Like carny fantasy. It's like a
I would actually compare this to Three Thieves.
I would compare this to Three Thieves,
also,
and even
carny fantasy,
and I would even favorably compare this to Three Thieves, which is cool because I like Three Thieves a lot.
Yeah,
I don't know,
you didn't like this book, Jared?
Not as much. You're saying favorably, like as good as Three Thieves or better?
Yeah, I think it was even on
all right,
even level with
even
Three Thieves.
I don't think it's I changed it. I don't think it's as good as Three Thieves.
Really?
The art's not as good, but the art is good.
The art is cool.
The art's great.
I liked it.
Yeah, but Nick, why don't you tell people what this book's about? Because I was thinking about it, and I don't know if I can exactly.
Well, it's about this orphan girl who
sounds depressing.
Is following around this caravan, and in this world, there's like a part of the world that's cut off from the rest of the world by mountains, and like beyond those mountains are like where all the monsters are.
Oh, you mean the Monster's Cradle?
Yep. And so there's like these monster tamers.
Monster tamers?
Who go around and, you know, hunt monsters and capture them and stuff. Kind of like Pokemon trainers or something.
I don't think... Like, really, really mean Pokemon trainers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so this girl kind of wants to be a monster tamer. And she's, like, playing around, like, with other kids, like, oh, a monster hunter. And then, like, she actually kind of gets set on that path by this mysterious... what is
monster.
It, like a cottage, like a caravan or
caravan.
One of those, yeah, like a caravan with a monster in it. And it gets tied up with this whole mystery involving these cat people who are monsters that have been sighted around town.
Like Kate Sith or
yeah,
something?
Kate
weird
Sith.
Name. Yeah.
They're like cat people that could turn human. And
except for their tail.
Yeah. And anyway, it's about her like going on a quest to become a monster tamer, basically. And that's about it. I mean, that's,
yeah,
that's
she's just like,
setup.
Yeah, she's got like kind of a thirst for adventure. So when kind
and she gets caught up in stuff when it
yeah,
comes across
so,
her
so
path.
So yeah, when
and,
it comes
yeah.
across her path, she very willingly wants to jump in and kind of, she wants to live life to its fullest.
She's a go-getter. Yeah.
She is a go-getter.
This is very much kind of like an origin story.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it,
yeah true.
Yeah, it's definitely a
it
part
sets
one.
Up a lot, yeah.
Yeah, it ends, oh, I would say, a little abruptly, actually.
Yeah, and the last third of it introduces, like,
but yeah.
kind of the supporting cast, which are great. Like, the little, there's a little imp guy who's...
Oh, my God, that imp is hilarious.
A barrel of laughs.
Yeah. Yeah. it's awesome. A really, yeah, it's a really funny book, too. Like, there's stuff where she's... When it starts out, she basically has, like, a circus tent where she is, like, a sideshow... Telling kids monster stories.
She's like swindling kids. Yeah,
yeah, basically swindling them, and all her dealings with them is really funny. And when she first encounters this monster, it's really good too. And she's just like, she's kind of the bane of the existence of this traveling.
Oh, he's great.
Well, yeah. the owner of the
yeah,
caravan.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's this really strange French guy
yeah,
for some reason.
He's definitely French because he says Z a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, where is the mouse? And
it's cool. There's a lot of like kind of mystery set up. She finds this golden twine, which is the title, I guess, of the first book.
Subtitle.
That kind of is tied to these cat people. And she's got a weird, mysterious past where she claims a dragon brought her like into the human world from the monster land.
She makes up a lot of stories, and you're like, some of those might be true.
Yeah, which, yeah, that yeah, I'm sure that'll be kind of like true and part of it. Because she's like, you know, it ends with them kind of heading off into the monster territory, which should be interesting.
Yeah, so there's a lot of cool stuff, and I don't want to say too much about it because there's...
Yeah, it's a lot of, whoa, look at that.
Yeah, and like finding, like, the stuff you find out about the Kate Siths, which is like a terrible name. I do want to say that.
I saw that.
Oh. I just want to keep calling them Cat Siths, which makes me think of like evil Jedi cat people.
Yeah.
But the art's very,
I'd say Miyazaki-ish almost. It's got this anime-styled influence to like the faces and stuff, but very... I just liked it. It was good.
Yeah, I do feel like the artist kind of lovingly renders the main character, and then sometimes some of the other characters don't look as great.
Yeah.
Particularly the kids that she talks to at the beginning. But I think all the monsters are really well drawn and stuff.
Cool.
But
the imps are great.
Yeah, yeah. The imp is really funny. But it's a great book. I mean, if you've got like a young kid who likes stuff like Giants Beware, Bone, or Amulet.
Yes.
And Three Thieves, this is definitely a good book for them.
Yeah.
All right. Up next, a book that's actually surprised me a good bit. This is called Foster Number One. This is by Brian Buccolato and Noel Tuazon. I see Nick over there saying that he did not read this.
He's
reading it right
now. But Jared,
now.
did you read this?
You guys start talking about it, I'll read it.
Yeah, I actually thought it was pretty good. Did you like it?
It was surprising, yeah. So the foster of it is like the idea that like there's a foster kid system is kind of what they're trying to set up. But it's like a normal world where there just happen to be like... This bugs me. It's one of those books where it's got an introduction on the opening inside cover, which tells you more than the actual comic does.
Well, I didn't actually read the introduction.
So I skipped that, and then I went back, and I'm like, really? I didn't know any of that. So.
I didn't feel like I needed to know any of that, though. I felt like I got a good story out of it.
Yeah, but it's basically setting up that there's, what do you say, like, werewolf-type monsters? It's
yeah,
not very
like
explicit,
werewolf-y
like
vampires.
The...
Basically, like you're kind of... traditional like kitty snatcher evil
monsters
guys
in the dark
but basically it's about this main character who's an alcoholic, and he lives in a really terrible apartment building full of junkies, and there's a kid that lives there whose mother is maybe like the worst of the junkies,
yeah, yeah.
And basically abandons him.
Yeah, there's kind of the implication that he might have been together with the mother, at least very close to her, and then, you know, some, you know, it pushed a certain point, and then they are no longer together, and he ends up, like, trying to take care of this kid till she comes back, and stepping out too far into his responsibilities, which gets him in trouble.
Yeah, and then it ends up that a lot of people are after this kid, and when the first guy shows up looking... Sorry, I can't remember if the kid was a boy or a girl.
It's a boy.
Okay, when the first guy kind of shows up looking for the boy, he's got, like, teeth like a snake, basically.
Yep.
And that's when you start to realize that maybe things are a little bit crazier than you thought. Yeah. And so he gets tangled up in all this stuff that's going on, and it ends with, like, a crazy action scene.
Yep.
And things get really out of control. And this book, like, really drew me in. I was really surprised. I thought the art was, like, a little sloppy at times.
Yeah.
But even
that got better as it went
along.
Yeah,
and in its own way,
used to it. Yeah.
Yeah, it is like very, it's like dynamic though, and and he creates a good mood. I think the coloring in it is really good. And
I really want to read this now.
Yeah,
this is a good book for Nick, actually.
Yeah, it was a really good book. I would definitely check it out if you can find it anywhere. We've got like a copy over here. This is Foster number one from some publisher I've never heard of.
New publisher.
Some
says
Dog
in
Year. That's all it says.
Good work, Nick. So definitely a new thing worth checking out.
It's just Dog Year.
Dog Year.
Foster number one. All right, so we got some other stuff here. It's not a big week, but there are a few things.
Some interesting ones.
We've got up next, we got National Comics Looker number one. This is by Ian Edginton, who people might know as the writer of Scarlet Traces.
Good stuff.
Or
Leviathan?
Yep, Leviathan, Kingdom of the Wicked. And then he's also... he's written a bunch of stuff, but those are the big ones. And the art in this is by Mike S. Miller, which is a name that seems familiar to me, but I don't really know who it is.
Yeah, I know the name too.
So this is the second book in the National Comics line, which is a series of one-shots focusing on maybe characters that aren't getting a lot of attention in the new 52
right,
launch.
Right, so that was my first question. Is this Looker stuff from an older character?
They're all from National Comics.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
So Kid Eternity was initially a National Comics character as well?
Yeah.
And so National Comics got bought by DC at some point? Is that
something like that.
It must have been a long time ago.
Yeah, because
like Madame Xanadu is going to be one of them
lot,
as well.
Yeah,
so...
Huh. So, what do we got here? The thing is with Ian Edginton, I love everything he does with Disraeli.
With Disraeli, yeah.
But then everything else I feel is just like, all right, or just whatever.
So it might be one of those like just perfect combo team efforts.
And this is kind of one of those
each other.
Just all right kind of things. It starts off with the vampires, like, the basic premise of this there's this woman that used to be a model, and she became a vampire, and now she runs, like, a modeling agency, and some of her clients have gone missing recently. And it's weird. The narration in the beginning is a little weird. It's one of those, like, I felt like I'd read that narration like 40 times
it's
before.
It's about her becoming a vampire. And
no,
yes,
but
you've read that 40
times.
No,
but it's that narration where it's like, vampires are not what you think. They're not these pretty boys. Like, well, I'm like, I read this like so many times.
Yeah.
Like, they're savage beasts. Like, well, I'm like, okay, all right.
There's actually, I think that's a little indicative of the whole book, which is has a very uneven tone to it.
Yeah.
Sometimes there are terrible, horrifying things happening.
Right.
And then sometimes it's like, hey, I'm goofy and look at my gay friend who's like a cross between Stanley Tucci and The Devil Wears Prada and Tim Gunn. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, there's something about it that just didn't sit right with
me. It's such a weird mashup of like genres, basically, of like, you know, goofy high fashion stuff and like gory vampire comics.
Yeah. And then like weird, like violent, like woman beating stuff.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, overall, I didn't, like, dislike it. I liked it. I liked that it was kind of different. There's not really too many, like, fashion-related comics out there.
Not anymore.
Well, there was Models, Inc.
There's Glamour Puss, but...
Sabrina.
And I thought the design for some of the characters were pretty cool. The monster that shows up at the end had a pretty cool design.
Patsy Walker Hellcat.
Billy the model.
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't know. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, no, it was interesting, because there were things I didn't like about it. For one, when you look, the cover by Guillaume March is great, and then
so
when you open
good.
It up, the art's not that good. Yeah. But then as you start to read it, you kind of get into the story.
Right.
And as I got into the story, I started to actually become really interested in what was going on, which surprised me.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. True. There's a little bit of, like, mystery set up near the end. And
unfortunately, like, my problem is that I'm going to compare this to the first National Comics, which was Eternity. And like that one I felt tied up the issue really well while leaving it open, like a really strong pilot to a TV show they're trying to pick up. And this one I felt was too much relying on the fact that it was like a TV show going on, so it was going to continue into issue two.
But it does tie up. It does tie up the main story of her.
It does, but like it's not as. I just wasn't as satisfied by how they tied this one up.
Yeah. I thought it was all right because it's like like she's trying to find her missing, you know, client or whatever, and she finds
one. Right. That's my point.
This
like,
one did
you get rushed to the end and you're kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
That was how I got to the end.
It didn't bother me as much as it did in the first one because I don't really care if there's ever a second issue with this. And I would really like for there to be a second issue, Kid Eternity.
Yeah.
But even that being said, it was kind of a fun read. I'm not going to be recommending it to a ton of people or anything.
No.
But, you know, if somebody's interested, I'd say
it gets a mild recommendation.
The mildest recommendation. All right, cool. So next up, we've got a good book. This is No Brow 7.
Oh, my gosh.
Brave New World, which is like No Brow 6, a British anthology from the publisher No Brow Press that is half illustrations and half comics. I will say the half with illustrations is beautiful.
Yep.
But the half with comics is what we're interested
in. That's what we'll be talking about.
Yeah. This has a ton of great people in it. Is there an Anders Nilsson comic in this?
Yep.
Is there?
Yeah.
Which one is the Anders Nilsson one?
There are so many good ones in here. I kind of start blurring out because there's like all these people I loved.
Wait, did I think that the Anders Nilsson comic was a Tom Gault comic?
No, that was a Tom Gault comic.
Okay. Anyway, this has stuff by Luke Pearson, Eleanor Davis, Domitil Chiarde, Jillian Tamaki, a new Yu Suwarda comic, a Michael DeForge comic. Basically,
it's insane.
The Joseph Lambert thing is great. Basically, a bunch of names that get us really excited, and maybe you guys are like, "What are you talking about?" But when you look at this, there's some beautiful art in here.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best things about this is like this is not all fresh new talent, but it's kind of like the best of the recent era of comics, and then some classics like Yu Suwarda, who you know are still amazing. But like
that Yu Suwarda story, I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, exactly.
On that thing.
But like issue 6 of No Brow, this is you know a themed anthology. The last one was the double, so a lot of like mirror image stories and stuff. But this one is Brave New World, which is interesting for a British publisher to do it because I feel like they're much more concerned with that sort of stuff. You know, it's like a British book. But I found it interesting that so many of them weren't just like dealing with like apocalyptic, you know. I don't know, totalitarian dictatorships like the novel Brave New World, but a lot of it was just like the idea of like, what is a new world? What is, you know, brave about stepping forward and trying something new? Like for the...
Well, like a really good example of that is there's a story in here called Space Cadet, which is by, I believe, the one by Andrew Ray. And it's two stories told at once. And one is about a kid finding pornography in the woods for the first time.
Yep.
And one is about like
a space band going to a new world.
Yeah, an astronaut going to a new world and like trying to decipher an alien language.
And it's literally left page is the kid, right page is like a mirror image of it, of the astronaut, and just like how different it would be for a different situation.
And I feel like that, obviously, the Brave New World is, you know, a literal new world. And then kind of this kid, you know, entering the world of
maturity.
Pornography.
Maybe it's the same kid in the future.
I don't think it is, but maybe it is. Sure.
That would be amazing.
Maybe it is. Nick has been reading this more closely than I have. But there are a lot of great
picking
stories in
themes.
Here. There's a Joseph Lambert story,
that's
which is just about kids messing around.
That one, basically. That one's the best in here.
Yeah,
and kind of entering
good.
The brave new world of realizing your mortality.
Yeah.
Maybe
a
little
also,
younger than most people do. But
also like making good friends for the first time. And,
yeah. And the Tom Gault thing is great. It's two alphabets. Like a sort of Edward Gorey-esque alphabets, and one is sort of an alphabet of a wonderful, perfect future, and one is an alphabet of a dystopic future. And those
both
are
hilarious.
Yeah,
actually,
those are both really fun.
I really like the Jillian Tamaki one.
That's the one where the
woman is shrinking.
that was such a good sci-fi story.
Great, yeah, that was just like kind of a perfect little story, and it had not too much ambiguity or anything. It was like pretty straightforward, but really well told and. The art is just
there's also a Michael DeForge story who I'm a big fan of, which is really weird about these leather men from outer space that come to Earth.
Yeah,
and like,
that was so
and like
bizarre.
Kids are like obsessed with them. I love it though. I thought it was so great.
What was the one that Mikael Sommer drew that someone else wrote? I forget which one that was.
I can't remember.
He's the guy who did what was it? Obsolete.
Oh, it's Goldilocks. No, it's you know, he drew it. It's written by Alex Spiro.
Yeah,
that one.
That one's pretty cool.
Oh. All of this is good.
Yeah, it's all good. The Coyarde one's great. The Eleanor Davis one is beautiful. Yeah, basically, if you're interested in indie or art comics, you probably are already kind of aware of No Brow, or especially if you listen to this podcast. But
but we will say that, again, they've knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, I think this is probably the best of the anthologies.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. And like all their books, it's the production value on it's great, too. So No Brow number 7. Highest recommendation.
Out. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti writing some good stuff and some bad stuff.
Go on, Kevin.
Another comic that came out this week, Phantom Lady and Doll Man. Is that actually the full, or is
it
is,
says it on it, there. I think it's the full title.
It's called Phantom Lady and Doll Man. Anyway, yeah, so they Phantom Lady and Doll Man number 1 of 4, thankfully. this is written by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti with art by Kat Staggs, who I imagine is just like a homeless person.
No.
No, I don't know. Who wants to talk about Phantom Lady?
I don't want to talk about it.
Phantom Lady.
I will say that okay. Phantom Lady does not do much phantoming in this, but there is a man who is dolling it up later. But it's other not than that, it's a straight like crime story that you later on realize is a superpowered crime story.
It's not the worst.
It's people yelling at each other for no reason and like women getting their heads smashed on car like hoods and I feel like the writing is trying to mirror something like Boardwalk Empire or something like these two brothers that run this criminal empire and have problems with each other. I don't know. The whole
investigative reporter, and she's going undercover by sleeping with one of the brothers, and yeah, it's
there's a part in here where she's like she like steals the guy's phone and she's like, I gotta take this to the guy I know that has a laptop.
Well, the thing is, it's weird because this is kind of like an origin story.
Yeah.
Because in the very, very beginning, she's Phantom Lady and she has all these powers. And then the rest of it takes place 6 months earlier.
That's what I meant.
And
so
by the end
like
of the issue, she's not
thing.
Even like Phantom Lady yet.
So yeah,
that's
like
my point.
I wasn't interested in this at all. Though, so
it's more of
I'm
an origin of Doll Man, if anything.
who is a really uninteresting character?
Yeah.
He's got a goatee.
Yeah, he does.
He's just a tiny man.
He owns a laptop.
He does own it. He's the only person that Phantom Lady knows that owns a laptop.
he makes terrible decisions involving organized crime all the time.
He's like the Atom, except he can't grow back to normal size.
Yeah. This was not a great comic. The art was good. The art's not terrible.
No,
it's fine. It's okay. It's just,
I didn't even like really dislike the story that
but
much.
But did you like the story?
No, it was just okay.
Yeah.
It kept me interested.
I have more patience for terrible comics than mediocre comics, personally.
Interesting. Like, yeah, no, that's true.
Like, I'd rather read the biggest train wreck in the world.
You want your train wreck to have, like, monkeys in it and it'd be on fire, not just crashing.
Yeah, or just not, like, not just running out of gas.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like when you see an accident, you don't want to see, like, just some people, like, arguing. You want to see, like, carnage, cars, heads in the middle of the road.
I'm gonna pretend that's not true. All
this
right,
is why Nick lost his job driving a big rig.
This is why Nick crashes his car all the time.
It's true. He's like, woo!
Well, actually, other people just crash into you. It's like karma.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah.
All right, so up next.
Which came first?
We've got Scam number 1 of 5 by Joe Mulvey. Like Foster, a comic that I didn't really think anything of. We just kind of ordered it to check
new
it out.
New publisher, too.
And by Comics Tribe.
Comics Tribe. Everybody's favorite publisher. Comics with an X, right?
Yeah. Comics of comics.
And this was, I thought this was actually kind of a solid book.
Yeah. This was not astounding, but had good art, really good coloring. I was more impressed by that than the writing. And
a lot of hyperbole on the back cover.
Yeah, but I can see that like these days to publish a comic, you kind of have to do that, like you know, sending out samples to everyone beforehand and stuff.
Well, supposedly Comics Tribe is becoming synonymous with quality books, which means I guess we haven't been ordering their stuff.
Sorry,
but so the basic story of this is kind of like a double cross on a job. A bunch of criminals, con men.
Yeah, you got like an Ocean's 11 start.
Yeah, and or more like an Ocean's 11 finish because they're kind of all working together, and then they get double crossed, and then the guy that double crosses them is the security guy.
This is like Ocean's 12
at a casino, and
stunk.
And he, they decide to rob the casino basically.
Yeah, for revenge.
And then they have superpowers.
Yeah, that is the weird thing. I was like, do they have superpowers?
Oh, yes.
The one guy definitely used some kind of glowing hands to make a
card. They have a conversation where they're like, we should call this whatever, and they're like, just call them powers. So, yes, they have superpowers, which is weird because they use it once in the opening double cross to escape. One person uses it. Other than that, nothing. And then at the end, you're like, oh, they're going to do crazy stuff from now on. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of crazy superpowers in this.
Yeah, so I'll be curious to see how much that lends itself to the story, because as far as I could tell, it was a perfectly nice little crime story thing, and then that seemed like a really superfluous element. So, but overall, I mean, I thought this was fun. The dialogue was actually kind of sharp and pretty solid. The art's okay.
Yeah. The art is
a little inconsistent.
Yeah,
but
he has problems that like all of his people have this very serious look on their face all the time. You know, there's this. I don't know.
These comments on the back are really bothering me though.
Well, don't worry about it. It's got nothing to do with what's inside.
This one that says it breathes fresh life into the indie scene. Like
that's silly. That's but overall, I thought
I'd say interesting. Yeah,
I thought it
was checking out.
No, it was pretty good.
For some reason, the Scam logo looks like the Shade the Changing Man logo from the old Vertigo series,
<It does. laughs>
which is really strange, but I'm sure that was not intentional. Anyway, so Scam number one. Oh, by Joe Mulvey, I didn't say that.
Yep. It's pretty good.
Yeah. All right, we just got one more book this week. This is Steed and Mrs. Peel number zero.
Yeah.
This is by Mark Waid and Steve Bryant. Basically, there was a Steed and Mrs. Peel series coming out that was some old comics that were written by Grant Morrison, and then maybe they finished it up with new creators, or either way somebody else took over after, and it wasn't very good, I didn't think it was very good, whatever. And so I didn't think much of this, except you know it's written by Mark Waid, who is on a doing some really good stuff right now with
Daredevil
and the new Rocketeer series that came out last week, and it seems like he's gonna keep it going with Steed and Mrs. Peel.
Another problem with this is another one of those number zeros that's a number one.
Yeah, it seems truly to be a number one to me, but it's definitely says number zero.
Yeah, true.
All right, what is this about? Tell us, Kevin.
You seem very excited about
excited
the plot
about
point of this.
It's
or
true.
The setting.
Okay, so basically, it's about Steed and Mrs. Peel, Emma Peel, the characters from the old Avengers TV show.
Yep.
And there's such a weird, elaborate scheme going on.
Yeah,
in this.
It's so kind of amazing.
Basically, there's this organization that's trying to steal government secrets from the British government, and particularly MI5 or whatever.
What are they called?
I can't remember what they're called.
The Hellfire Club.
Oh, yeah, they are called the Hellfire Club.
So they ripped
Club.
Off everything from Marvel Comics?
or there was a Hellfire Club back in the Avengers show.
This was before the Hellfire Club showed up in Marvel Comics.
Yeah, I think they're ripping off the band, the Electric Hellfire Club. And this organization is trying to trying to steal secrets from the British government, and particularly these former spies who work for the government. And so basically they drug them, they give them
aging serum,
and then they build this kind of fake
set
that makes them that's supposed to make them think that they live in the year 2000 now, and that they're all 80 years old.
Yeah.
But it's all like super retro futuristic stuff, which is great. It's like the Jetsons, that idea in the 60s of what the future is going to look like. So it's all really funny, and I think Mark Waid really gets the hilarity of all of it, even though back when it would have come out it wouldn't have been funny that,
but it's still awesome
but it's also really awesome. It's monorails and crazy all the paintings on the wall are of cities on the bottom of the ocean and stuff.
There's hilarious
that.
Snappy dialogue,
and there's a woman who's pretending to be a robot.
It's really
so it's a lot of stuff like that, and then basically Steed and Peel see right through it, and that's about it. It's a pretty
if we didn't make it clear, it is still set in the 60s.
Yeah.
This is not an update.
Yeah,
whatever,
this is
so
definitely
it's even
set
more
the,
hilarious to see all the comparisons.
It's set in the 60s. It's and also in the fake year 2000.
Yes.
What about this art though?
I actually at first I was not a fan.
Try
of the
to
art.
Defend it. I dare you.
Okay. Well, the coloring's great for one.
It's great. The art's great. You're crazy.
The coloring is part of the art.
Oh gosh.
Look at that.
The art it is a little stiff, but I feel like in the way that like Mike Allred's art is stiff, it still has kind of a fun quality about it to me.
It feels like a comic that was drawn in the '60s.
I definitely agree with that. And I think the color palette they use in it is great and really evocative of the time it's supposed to take place in.
Yeah.
And it's just it was fun to me. It's a little stiff. I definitely Jared is a big fan of the dynamism,
but it's stiff in a really awesome
Kirby
way.
All the way,
it really reminds me of some.
I think your Mike Allred comparison is really good. Yeah.
And but just the things going on in this comic are so funny, and I feel like the artist kind of, he at least delivers what was asked of him. And
that's
it,
true.
And he seems like he's having fun with it as well.
Yeah,
like,
I think there's just a few scenes where people were talking and it just, it was, that was all that was happening. And that made it really worse.
I can definitely
see
that.
When people are getting thrown through walls.
It definitely has like an apartment 3B kind of feel to the art. But overall, Mark Waid is managing to write these really light, fun comics like Daredevil and Rocketeer and now this, and you know, it's awesome.
Yeah,
it's good
really
stuff.
Fun.
It's great.
Yeah, this is actually, well, no, it wasn't my favorite thing this week, but I
it's
one of the many pleasant surprises this week.
Yes,
favorite ongoing of the week.
For me, that would be Phantom Lady. Number.
It's not ongoing.
Oh, thank God. All right. So, yeah. So that's it for this week.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's all we got.
Well, there was Voyeurs by Gabrielle Bell, but I didn't get a chance to read that, and Nick didn't finish it. So we're going to talk about that next week.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You guys got any final words for our listeners?
Justin Gray, Jimmy Palmiotti, keep up the uneven work.
Yeah, that also, yeah. Definitely do that. And I guess we'll just see you guys next time.
Yep.
See ya.